So we're up to Simon Pei Dalet Halacha Beis. We're up to page Kuf Nun Zayin. On the bottom of the page, the Shi'adim Mitzvah Halacha Ois Beis. Before we go further, I just want to review just a few little things I came across yesterday. I was trying to do some research about the Karfeit, different matters leading to the Erev. So there's a new sefer. I was going to bring it in, but it's very heavy. It's heavy to carry. It's a new sefer about the law. It's a new sefer that discusses the laws of Eruvin, and they have two little sections about Eruvin in modern day Eruvin in cities. It's very interesting, and he discusses the issue of a karfeis. And he brings down a lot of the same things we learned in the Shemesh and Malacha, the Dvar Shul and the Rosh. If you have a city, you have an Erev in a city, and in the middle of the city you have an area that is not used, like a park, or an area that's not Hukaf Ladira, does it create a problem for the rest of the city? So basically what he write up says that there are many Paiskim that say that in order for an area to be called a Karfev, Shlehikaf Ladira, it has to be 100% not usable by people. And that means, like the example given in Shulchan Aruch, a swamp or a place where you plant vegetables. Like you can't step on it. If you're going to step on this piece of land, you're going to cause the damage to whatever is growing there, or swampland. But even if you have a pool and the water is suitable for drinking, either by humans or by animals, and alachas kama v'kama, a park where people sit down and they relax and they go there for recreation, that is not called the karfev shaloi hukaf ladira, and that is not included in the problem. That does not have the possibility to cause harm to an Erev. However, he does point out that there are, Rav Moshe dealt with this issue in very great detail, that there are definitely, let's say in Brooklyn and different Eruvim cities, where there are areas that are not inhabitable by people. There is like some type of swampland, or you have rivers. You have rivers which people do not travel in. Dirty rivers that people do not travel, that are more than 10 tefachim deep, that are definitely are problematic. And he mentions that the biggest problem that Moshe dealt with, the biggest problem are cemeteries. Any area, a city, let's say Brooklyn is probably not such a big problem because you have fences. Washington Center probably is pretty well fenced. I don't know, maybe years ago it was. Maybe when Moshe dealt with this in 1946.
But it's still a carpet, even if it's fenced.
Oh, so that's the question now going inside. If you have a mechitz around the karfeit, that solves the problem. He talks about, in this book, he talks about cities, and he's not talking about Brooklyn, he's talking about out of town. A lot of community, any city out of town, the number one thing is to make a community Erev. And it's not like in Brooklyn where you have a cemetery, you can have a Washington cemetery, I'm willing to bet, not that I know, is very well fenced. Right? You're living in Brooklyn, they don't want people running around the cemetery. So they put up a fence. If you have a fence around a cemetery in any area that's problematic, it's okay. There's now another Shiloh, if you're allowed to go inside Washington Cemetery on Shabbos and carry inside Washington Cemetery if you are of the opinion that there is an Erev around the entire Brooklyn. But let's say you go out of town. Okay, you go to Minnesota, you go to Tennessee, you go to somewhere in the middle of South Carolina, it's a Jewish community, and there's an Orthodox rabbi, and he makes an Erev. They want to go utilize the telephone lines, and you want to make an Erev, it's inevitable you're going to have a cemetery somewhere. And the cemetery, according to Rav Moshe, is the biggest problem. It's definitely considered an area that shaloi hukaf ladira. You can be makel and say a park is hukaf ladira. You can be makel and say even a river, as long as the water is drinkable, the water is suitable for human consumption. There are many, many coolest, but not a cemetery. So if you don't have a fence that is... You don't have a fence that is halachically valid. You may have some type of a few things here and there, you know, keeping the people out, but a halachic fence, which means there's no breach of from the ground up of three tefachim, and you don't have a problem of a breaches, openings more than 15 feet, entrances in some of these cemeteries that are not very well kept, and out of town, no one's afraid that someone's going to dig up dead and things like that. It is a very big problem if it will ruin the Erev. Jews. So he says it has to be taken care of. It has to be, a solution has to be found. Another very interesting issue that he deals with is Schiras Smokim. We live in, of course, we are non-Jews. So for the Jews, we make an Eruve Chatzeros. Among the non-Jews, you have to know to make it one Rishus. You have to rent the rights from the non-Jews in order to be allowed to, that it should be considered to be one Rishus. In order that it should be considered one big Rishus, we have to rent from the non-Jews. So how are you able to rent from the non-Jews? And you live in a city, New York City, Brooklyn. New York City has about 8 million people. That's the whole New York City. Brooklyn has about 3 million people. How are you going to rent Schiras Makom from a city where you have almost 3 million non-Jews? So in Europe, it was typically done through the government. If you rent from the mayor or from the government official, that is considered as if you've rented from every single individual. So he talks about that. Many poskim Zman Hazeh hold that it's a very big problem, not just for Brooklyn, but for any area, any community Erev. And we, Baruch Hashem, we live in a democracy. And Rav Eliashiv, he writes this theory very clearly. Rav Eliashiv held that a government that is of the nature, a democratic government, there's no way you can really do a Schiras Makom that is 100% good. Because a Schiras Makom from the government is only when the government has absolute control over the citizens. The government can just wake up one day and say to the people, you, out of the house. Get out of the house. And he writes, Rav Eliashiv writes, he remembers that's where he lived. I don't know exactly, that's how it used to be. The government, so therefore you go, you do Schiras Makom from the government, you're really getting Schiras Makom from the every single individual, because they have absolute control. Okay, but to what degree? That's what he writes. He writes, so we'll make an economy, we'll samech on that. Because if you were not samech on this, then you couldn't have an Erev anywhere in the whole America. You couldn't have one unless you have in a community, Kiryas Yoel maybe. Well, maybe somewhere in Lakewood. I don't even know there. But you have to have it is very big. It is a very big problem. Obviously, with Lou Makel, in this safer, he tilts. He's very bent on being very machmir. You can definitely get that impression. And it's very interesting what he does. He goes through all the scenarios. Very, very interesting. Basically, he says that every single community Erev relies upon at least 10 leniencies. 10 leniencies. And then the cost is just astronomical to truly maintain an Erev. Even though every Erev may start off well, they rely upon telephone poles. And the telephone poles always eventually tilt. The tenth tefach lechi that you attach the telephone pole after a period of time is certainly not going to be directly underneath the wires, and it has to be maintained. Eagle, and then you'll always find stories where there are problems, and it's the larger the area, the harder it is to maintain. And again, he goes through some of the halachic issues, which every single step of the way in a community Erev, we rely upon a leniency. So he says that Rav Heinemann made an Erev in Baltimore. And it seems like a lot of the things that he talks about is Rav Heinemann, the Erev in Baltimore, there are a lot of problems with the Erev in Baltimore. So I think at one point he was very frustrated with all of the coolest that they're relying upon, and he asked Rav Heinemann, and he asked either Rav Moshe or Rav Yaakov, and he basically said, maybe we should just forget it. It's just not kedai to make an Erev. So I don't remember if either Rav Moshe or Rav Yaakov says, no, you have to make an Erev. You can't throw out the whole Shulchan Aruch. If you can make an Erev, you have to make an Erev. But they're all right, but a Baal Nefesh, for the Hamoinam, there has to be an Erev. Well, you can, of course. But a Yochid, Kol HaKavod, should be Machner. Because the layers of Kulos that you're relying upon is so great, and the difficulty that there is in maintaining the standards that he writes in the Sefer, that every Erev that he knows of, that when they start out, there was a very high standard. But as time passes, there are always problems, and the cost, the money that we needed to restore it to the higher standard is always so great And once you already have an Erev, you're not going to go backwards. So what do you do? So you rely upon another kula. Oh, you can make it. There's a shita that says this is also good. But you didn't rely upon that 2 years ago. Well, 2 years ago, we didn't need to rely upon it. Now it's either going to be no Erev, or we have to raise $30,000. Who's going to give us $30,000? So we make it. And then 2 years go by, and all of a sudden the city does construction and something else happens. So what are we going to do? Oh, there's another kula. There's another kula in Shulchan that we can rely upon. But you don't have to rely upon the kula. You just raise $50,000. No, that you can't. So it's very interesting. He describes all the scenarios. Obviously, he has a lot of experience. But this is a very nice study. He says, Rav Moshe and Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, you can't throw out the Shulchan Aruch. There's something called an Erev, and for the Hamoin Am, people there need an Erev, and there are people that want to rely upon the kulos of an Erev, and it's an obligation of every community to make an Erev, where you can make an Erev.
Moshe was not that big on making an Erev.
Now, in Brooklyn, Rav Moshe, there's Rav Moshe had a Dasi Yachid that holds that if you have anywhere that's Yud Beis Mill, an area of Yud Beis Mill, which is approximately something like two, how many miles is it? 2.5 miles? I don't remember the exact numbers. 8.6 miles by 8.6 miles. If you have in that area, you have in that area somewhere, it doesn't say 3 million, something close to 3 million. You have to have 600,000 men over the age of 20 and between 20 and above, which basically means if you have a population of somewhere near, it doesn't have to be, I thought it had to be 3 million, because the truth is in Brooklyn, doesn't make the way they, at least legally, it doesn't come to 3 million. They say it's 3 million because there are a lot of illegal immigrants that are undocumented, which push us way over 3 million, but according to the official figures, it's not 3 million. I think Rav Moshe writes, you don't need mamish 3 million. There's enough where there would be 600,000 men, and they don't have to all be out in the street. It means that area, Rav Moshe says, a das, a very big chiddush, where that automatically makes every single street into a Rishus Haram Derais. Now, when this sefer explicitly says this at least two or three times, that according to Rav Moshe, he writes the word every dead end street. Okay, I've got the name of the sefer. It's a brand new sefer. Came out about less than a year ago. Beautiful sefer. Every dead end street is considered, according to Rav Moshe, to be a Rishus Harabim Derisa. L'may nafkamina. A Rishus Haram Deraisa cannot be rectified with a Tzura Sapesach. The only way you can make an Erev in a Rishus Harabim Deraisa is with doors. Doors, delosos, which basically means you have real gates, or even if the gates are not closed, just as long as theoretically the gates can be closed, there is some technology where they attach to a pole, they attach some type of material where theoretically if you want you can stretch it out, you can open it, you can close, you can close, you don't have to do it. As long as theoretically it's possible for you to take this material, to unwind this material that's wrapped around the pole and close the entire thing, that would be considered to be a delus. So if you have a Rishus Haram Deraisa, the only way you can rectify a Rishus Haram Deraisa, every street, which basically means the street has to be at least about approximately say, 32 feet wide, between 16 and 32 feet wide, it's called a Rishus Haram Deraisa, and a Tzura HaPesach would not work because of the principle Osei Rabim Umevalei Mechitzta. If the Rabim walk underneath a type of fence, if you have a real Rabim, then Tzura HaPesach, what we do with the two sticks, two poles, and the thing on top, fishing wire on top, is not good for Rishus Haram. Therefore, every single area that you see along the dead-end streets along Avenue I is not according to the Shita of Rav Moshe. According to Rav Moshe, he writes this explicitly, according to Rav Moshe, all the streets that you see here in Brooklyn that have an Erev on the dead-end street, Shalei Kedin.
What's the problem with the dead-end street?
A dead-end street, according to Rav Moshe, is a Rishus HaRabim Daraisa, since it's part of Brooklyn. And Brooklyn is an area that is called the Yud Beis Mill by Yud Beis Mill, with a population of 3 million people, which is equivalent to what took place in the Midbar. It becomes a Machane Yisrael, which is a Rishus HaRabim. And when you have a Rishus HaRabim, the only way you can enclose it is with walls. Basically, you have to have real walls. Having a pole and having a thing going across the top is not a valid way to enclose a Rishus Harabim Doiraisa.
So how do those who were around, what is their story?
So they don't hold the Rav Moshe. So it's hypocritical to say, to go criticize people that use the Erev, when you yourself are also doing something that's not Lefi Rav Moshe. Yeah. You can't, if you want to use an Erev on a dead-end street that has a Tzuras HaPesach to close off the third side, the fourth side, so that is not according. So that basically means that I accept Rav Moshe's Pshita, that Brooklyn is called the Rishus Saram Deraisa, but I don't accept the Shita to the degree that we're going to consider even the dead end streets to be Rishus Saram Deraisa. Is there such a reason to Mechav? You take Rav Moshe, you can go and you can start splitting hairs and saying, I accept part of his Psak, but I don't accept another part of his Psak. So obviously, there are many Rabbanim that hold yes, because they wouldn't be doing this if this was not be acceptable. And then my father did not allow this. My father was asked to assist in making an Erev on a dead end street. My father said, our father had a very long conversation with Rabbi Bluth. Rabbi Bluth was one of Rav Moshe's biggest Talmidim. And at the end of the conversation, my father said he doesn't want to get involved because, according to Rav Moshe, if you want to make an Erev, you're obviously making a statement that you don't accept the Flatbush, you don't accept making an Erev in Brooklyn. You want to follow the Mahalach of Rav Moshe. And to go start splitting hairs and saying that this we accept, this we don't accept, is already something which you know, you have to. You're doing something which is not so simple. Rav Bluth would not allow him an Erev like that. My father, who was friends with him, did not want to, who was associated with him, did not want to. But other people, you go to Avenue I, every single block has, not every single block, but many blocks.
Middle of the block, then you just put together.
Oh, so then there's a question of, then he writes about putting on your own, on your street. Let's say you have a yard, you have a lawn. That, he says, is okay. That
pretty, no, but they connect 3, 4, 5 houses.
That's also fine, because as long as it's on the sidewalk. The sidewalk he holds is not a Rish, even according to Rav Moshe, is not a Rishus Haram Deraisa. That's private property. What? Crossing the street. If you make an Erev across the street, so if you want to go with Rav Moshe 100%, then you can't go the same way. You can't do it on a dead end street. You can't go across the street two sides. But on, let's say, you see, it's very common on the sidewalk. On the sidewalk, you have a yard or your front lawn, and people that have little children, they want to make an Erev on their front lawn, or some people, their neighbors. You have 3, 4 neighbors. They're all from, you're all religious, and they want to go make one big Erev connecting 3, 4, 5 houses along on the sidewalk, along their yard. That, he seems to say, is perfectly fine, because that, even according to Rav Moshe, is not a Rishus Haram Deraisa. That is private property. That has the status of either a chutz or a mavi. It's not a thoroughfare for the rabbim. The rabbim, the cars are not going on your sidewalk. They're not allowed to go on the sidewalk. You legally own that property most of the time. And if you don't own that property, even that, maybe Sefirot Smukim would help. But it's definitely not considered to be the sidewalk area, and certainly the part of the area where your front lawn is situated is not considered to be a Rishus Haram Deraisa, even according to Rav Moshe, and that you can make an Erev.
So you can make an Erev, like, you have a tree, I have a tree in front of my house, and it's flush with the gutter.
Yeah.
It's on the other side of the sidewalk.
Yeah.
And my neighbor down the way, he has a tree too, and then there's another one. I can make a Tzuras HaPesach by attaching a lechi to the tree with a cable wire. Or
well, something. You're going onto the sidewalk.
Seemingly,
that you can do. So you want to make an Erev? You go every single block. You make your own separate Erev. That seemingly will be possible. That's a lot of work. That's a very, very expense. All right, these are some of the issues. There's a lot more. There's a very good article by Rabbi Adam Mintz. And Adam Mintz was the Rav in Manhattan. Different communities, different shuls. He started his own shul, I think. So in the Hakira journal, there's a journal called Hakira. So he wrote a very good article, very interesting article. He presents the history, a lot of the truths of Rav Moshe. He leans towards the Matir, whatever. But there's a lot of information. There's a lot of information that's very well presented in a very clear way. And you can get this online. Go online, you just type in the Brooklyn Erev, Flatbush Erev, right away you'll get a PDF file from Hakira Journal by Anna Mintz, and there you don't have to follow his conclusion, but all of the material, the issue, the presentation, you have a lot of very, it's very thorough.
Why you museum, I think it was 16th.
Yeah.
One of the presentations is about the Maiden Erev in Manhattan.
Eisenstadt. I know his grandson.
Very much against it.
So this was the very
was
years ago. Or maybe if we have any other thing about All right, so these are some of the issues. I found that to be interesting. The cemetery, that's a very interesting...
In New Haven, there's a cemetery in town, and there, right across there's a park, and the air specifically is it goes from Yale, it says the cemetery and the park are excluded from
the Erev. So they made the Erev, they avoided the Erev?
No, the Erev goes right next to the... It's on the sidewalk next to the cemetery.
There's no fence and the cemetery is not...
Fence around the cemetery?
Oh, there is a fence.
But it's excluded from the Erev.
You can't carry inside.
The Lechi is right outside the Erev, but it goes and it's outside.
So why the park?
What
about the Rabbi you said the park will be accepted?
They excluded the park.
The park, or Moshe seems to say, was okay. Parks are okay. Parks are hukaf ledira. That's what he says. Even like, I asked someone yesterday, he told me, even like this on Avenue L, and on King's Highway and 22nd Street. So I asked someone at the Torah Das, or Shveren, the very big Talmud Chacham, he says, according to many poskim, they're fine. That's called hukaf ledira. That's not called, that anything which is as a use for recreation is hukaf ledira. A park, a field, so he seems to say, even Midwood Field, the big football field. You seem to say, yeah, people, you want to go for a walk there. Why should that not be called Hukaf Ledira? There are many poskim that say the Shloimah of Ledira has to be an area that's completely off limits to people. People don't go there. It's a forest. It's a swampland. In the country, the Sefer writes that it's common in the mountains. In the Catskills, when you make a roof around bungalow colonies, you're going to have swampland. There are certain parts of the Catskills where it's not developed. You don't go there. People don't go there. It's dangerous. It's swampy. And that, in a chnami, can be problematic if it reaches the size of a karfif. So it seems, from what I was told, I don't know the answer, but it seems that it's okay. That's what the consensus is, because that's called recreation. Even though no one's living there, I was always on the assumption that it's no good, but I was told yesterday it's not true. Shaloi Hukaf Ledira has we're very makel today. It has to be limited to an area that is off limits for human beings. People don't go there at all. And the classic example is a swamp or an area, a garden, where if you step on the land, you're going to cause damage to what's growing there, the vegetables. Or, as Moshe says, a cemetery. A cemetery, by definition, is a mokum that's not miyuchad for the living. It's for the dead. You have no business being there.
You told us first we were on L 18.
So I made a mistake.
So now we can be.
You're clarifying.
No, by me, you don't have to say that. I'm not a practicing rabbi. I can be brutally honest. Dvarim shamarti lochem tohu sein biyadi. Like everything is like that by me. Yeah.
A guy does use the Arab, and you don't until that.
What?
No, he says, how are you going to get the toy there for my grandchild? So I said,
you leave it there.
Well, I leave an Arab in Flatbush, and they'll take their toys there. But they're willing to share it with your...
Right, exactly, right, exactly. That is correct, yeah.
When they were putting up the Arab 30-something years ago,
yeah.
Everyone who was against the Arab quoted Reb Moshe and saying Ocean Parkway.
I don't know the details. I'm not... I don't know anything. I don't... That doesn't seem to be the issue. The issue seems to be Rav Moshe holds that an area, the Yisoid of Rav Moshe is Yud Beis Mill by Yud Beis Mill with a population of 3 million, close to 3 million people, makes it dugma to the Diglei Midbar, and it made the entire area, every single street that is 16 amos wide, automatically becomes a Rishus Haram Deraisa. This is a chiddush, the only Rav Moshe. Many other, all other poskim don't say such a chiddush. When they quote the Ocean Parkway, they're quoting other poskim that object to the Erev because a street that is more than 16 amos wide, that is a public thoroughfare that goes from one end to the other. Some want to say Ocean Parkway goes from the beginning of Brooklyn, from when you get off the Prospect Expressway, all the way down to Coney Island. This qualifies what it says in the Gemara, that a street that's more than 16 amos that goes goes from one end of the city to the other end of the city is a Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa. So to make an Erev in Rishus HaRabim D'Araisa, Tzuras HaPesach does not work. So if you want to make two Eruvim, it's according to these poskim, it's good. You can make an Erev on one side of Ocean Parkway and another Erev on another side of Ocean Parkway. The reason why they didn't do that is because you can't afford to do that. To do that, you need $1 billion to go, and you need to cut through red tape, all government red tape, to erect all these high-tech things, and it's never going to happen. If you make an Erev around the entire Brooklyn, you don't need to do all that much because the infrastructure is already there. The problem is, by making it over around Brooklyn, you're passing through this street, this street that's more than six damasam wide, that is mefulish, mikotze elakotze, from one end to the other end. And then the rule is, if that alone, not the side streets, not the corner streets, if that alone is a reshus saram deraisa, a tzuras ha-pesach does not work. You need delossos, you need doors. So the people have suggested, you can put up doors. We can put up on the two sides, the very front of Ocean Parkway, the very end of Ocean Parkway, or different ports. We can put up doors, high tech doors. They don't have to be closed. They just have to theoretically be able to be closed. That then the question is: does the Losos also need a Tzuras HaPesach built in? Maybe yeah, maybe not. And it gets very complicated. There are layers and layers of complexities that increase. And okay, a lot of what he writes is that the bigger the area is, that he makes this argument, the bigger the area is on a practical level. Let's forget about the halachic issues. On a practical level, it's a nightmare. It's a major, major nightmare and a major expense that rarely will the community be able to uphold on the high standard that everyone will be satisfied with to implement a community area in a big area. You have a little area, you go out of town, you have a small area, there in the Chanami. There many room was set. Rav Shimon Iders, he was the go-to man. Shimon Iders, Zecher Levracha, I once went to a seminar, the National Council of Young Israel, Rav Herschel Schachter, he was the featured speaker. He gave a very long seminar with diagrams discussing various communities, how the Eruvim were set up. And the name that he said over and over many times is Rav Shimon Iders. Rav Shimon Iders years ago was the go-to man. He was the mumcha. He went out to all these communities and he set up the Eruvim. And he, in fact, he mentioned many, many, many horror stories, many nightmares. Rav Herschel Schachter, where there was an Eruv, and then they discovered that this doesn't make any sense. Someone pointed out that, so they did research in Hanami. 2 years ago, it was set up properly. But construction, the city did construction, and they made this barrier, took down this barrier, and this happened, that happened, and now no longer was it halachically kosher. And no one was paying attention. So,
who was supposed to be checked there?
It's supposed to be checked, but who's paying someone to check it? And what happens when he doesn't get paid? And what happens when the person who's checking it discovers there's a problem? And then you go, you make a phone call, tell this, and then they say, well, you find a cooler. No, and the next week, he has another cooler, and another cooler. You call up the website. It's always working.
It's not true.
What?
It's not true. Yeah, it's not true. It's been down a few times. Ocean Parkway.
Yeah.
If it's closed down, Ocean Parkway, can that take it away?
It takes away the status of being Ocean Surround their eyes. Yeah.
So what I heard.
Yeah.
One night,
they close it down. In Achanami, these are coolest. These are techniques. They're ways in Achanami. In Achanami, 100%.
Everything.
He writes in the book that every Erev and every community Erev, we're talking about good. We're talking about Eruvim where everyone is using it. We're not talking about complicated places. Go out of town, out of New York City. Every community is going to have an Erev. Every one of those Eruvim is built upon many coolest. Many coolest. There's some more than others.
I'll tell you for a difference. Lakewood has an Erev.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Nobody will tell you not to use it. In Brooklyn, till 9. They'll say there's no such thing as an Eruv.
I don't know about that. See, the Lakewood has an Eruv. So even where they have Eruvim, it's very common. And among these like developments, these communities, they have their own Eruv.
Yeah, yeah. But listen,
there are many layers.
They won't tell you not to use Tedma's Eruv.
Okay.
I mean, it happened to me.
Okay, fine. Brooklyn, it became political, it became very controversial. It became, and it's also you can't argue, you can't say not that it's extremely much more. The complexities of Brooklyn area are on a scale that are way beyond a room out of New York City. You're dealing with 8 miles. It's a nightmare. It really is a nightmare. So, of course, it's a good thing that Hamoinam, a lot of poskim said that you should make an erev no matter what in order to minimize with all the coolest people that are not Shomer Shabbos from Chil Shabbos. Rav Yosef writes this. It should be an erev no matter what because there are people that are not Shomer Shabbos that they're carrying. So be mahana them. You should take away the Chil Shabbos.
When I moved into this area from Syria, it's called Shari Tzion. This is in the late 50s. They used to carry on Ocean Parkway their talis because they did material.
Uh huh.
And they were against the Arab.
But were they carrying?
No, they were carrying. And when the Arab came up years later,
they were against the Arab. But were they still carrying their talisim?
No, I don't think they do it now, but they were doing it then.
Yeah, because it was out of ignorance.
They did it.
Out of ignorance. So this is a very common approach, is that you should have an area for the Hamoin. He brings out this point. For the Hamoin Am, there must be an area. There's a whole Shulchan Aruch. There are coolest. We rely on the coolest. So that's the way it is. But for a Yochid who wants to be Machmir, there are grounds to Allah Baruch.
Don't tell me it doesn't exist.
No, I know. You can't throw out the whole Shulchan Aruch. This used to be the role of a Rav in Europe. You have to make an Erev in a city. They didn't have the complications that we have today, but it's...
Against the Erev of Manhattan.
Okay, that's another. Rav Moshe, the original tshuvas of Rav Moshe was not about Brooklyn. The original tshuvas, 1956, the first Rav Moshe wrote a tshuva about the Erev. It was about the Manhattan Erev.
And they were very much against it.
Rav Moshe was very much against it. Rav Moshe there, he wasn't very strong because Rav Moshe was referring, because he was much younger then, and there were Gedolim that were older than him, and he wrote it in a very respectful, like there are other Gedolim. I'm a youngster here. And I want to respectfully state my opinion. And he was very soft.
Not even the whole
affair. Yeah, but actually, a lot of the things were Moshe. I'm telling you, sort of at the very end, he said, yeah, but there's some areas that...
1980 was a lot later. A lot of things changed. All right. I don't know. Everyone has another story. I know someone in my father's shul. He told me that he was sitting in the meetings. And he was telling me he was at the meetings, and he was telling me things that are shocking. Is he right? Is he wrong? Did he misunderstand what was going on? You hear a lot of things. Whatever it is, and there's a lot to learn, and it's very complicated, and different opinions, and that's it. To each his own. To each his own. Yeah.
Did your father's shul use the Erev?
My father's shul had a neutral policy. In other words, they would announce the Erev is up, the Erev is down, every Shabbos. But when it came Sukkos, and the shul had a sukkah, which was used by a lot of people, there was an Erev around the shul. There was a sukkah, the shul had a sukkah, and to go from the shul into the sukkah, my father insisted they should put up an Erev. Because not everyone used the Erev, and the people that want to go carry from the shul into the sukkah into the shul. Many people used to use the sukkah, not everyone had a sukkah.
Right.
So people would keep food in the shul. People would keep food in the shul refrigerator. And they would eat their few meals in the shul. So there would be an Erev around, and for Shalash Shudas. We had Shalash Shudas in the sukkah every Shabbos. So to go set up in the Shalash Shudas. So it accommodates everyone. You want to have an Erev, there's an Erev. You don't want to have an Erev, there's a flap of sheriff. They used to have the green light and the red light, the red flag and the green flag, and then they turned into lights. Now they got modern. Instead of having a flag,
where's their lights?
Now
there's lights.
Not lights.
J also, they don't even turn on anymore. They used to turn on the light. They don't turn on anymore. They used to have lights. There's a website. They don't even tell you. Go to the website. Is there a way down? But that's only one Erev. Since then, there were two more groups who wanted upgrades. Remember, there are many layers of stringencies in Hidurim in the Erev. So there were new groups of people who felt that the standards were too low for them, and they made a new Eruv with higher standards. And then there's another group. So there are, I think now there are three Eruvim. Is that?
No, two.
Two?
Yeah.
to everyone?
It is Sephardic.
Yeah.
Would it be a rub?
A rub. Yeah.
And the Arab.
All right. Let's go. Let's go. Maybe at some point we'll do more and more. We'll do more about this. But let's now go
to. Friday was a problem with the Arab.
Why?
Because the phone didn't work.
What do you mean the phone didn't work?
When you called the phone, you did
didn't know.
We didn't know. And I, since...
Well, they said that it's not yet determined?
No. You got a Verizon...
Okay.
You got crazy messages from Verizon. And I, since I'm of that age where I remember from 1980, I remember back when the Arab first went up, the Rebbeim told us, if you don't hear that it's up, you don't use it. And I still have the original Arab book, and it does say that. Now, everyone I talk to on this Shabbos, I didn't hear it was down. So
that's a secondary issue. The first is an issue of assuming that we can make a good Arab that is halachically valid. Then there's a secondary issue. Then there's a secondary issue that you have to be responsible of making sure that the Arab is up. They're two separate issues. It's not fair to, you know, some people use an argument as a way to discredit the whole Arab. Since there's going to be a week when the Arab is down and people are not going to know, so you can't make an Arab altogether. That's a little extreme. But you have to be responsible. There are two issues. You have to make the Erev, you have to know the halachas, you have to accept the shittas, which opinions are valid, and which leniencies we're going to rely on, things that we're not going to rely on. And then there's a second issue, that once the Erev is in operation, you have to make sure the Erev this current week, this week is in operation.
You don't go by chazaka.
No, you don't go by chazaka.
5 weeks, no.
Maybe there is such a thing. I don't know. Maybe there is such a thing. Could be there is such a thing. I don't know. It's a little... Okay, let's jump ahead a little bit to the new sugya. It's pretty late. Just a little bit wearable. So we're in the middle of the sugya. This is a big sugya. It's a big sugya in technology today. You think this sugya is going to become a very big issue because that's what Apple has released. The new generation of electronical devices is all in the area of wearables. We're going to put into everything that you wear some type of gizmo, the watch, the Apple Watch, and there's a belt, and there's Google Glass, and they'll put things in your hat, and who knows what they'll put on. Everything that you're going to be doing. What?
For research, some people, there's always a problem on research studies, whether the patient's taking a medication.
So you have to wear something.
If someone come up with a chip,
yeah,
swallow it, it activates the technology that you know the patient took.
The medication.
The study drug,
the meds, to make sure. Okay, so this semen in Shulchan Aruch is now a big inyan. It's a big inyan because the technology, the future of technology is in wearables. And this is the sugya on Shabbos. What are you allowed to take and what are you allowed to wear on Shabbos? A tachshit, we went through a little bit. Let's just go up to a watch, a pocket watch. Let's take a look at page Kuf Nun Zayin, Oy Space, Kli Shoyz. Are you allowed to carry in your pocket a pocket watch on a gold chain? So the answer is definitely not. He's referring over here to that you're not allowed to carry a pocket watch. Page Kuf Nun Zayin. Kuf Nun Zayin Oyspace. It says in the Kitzur that you're not allowed to wear a pocket watch. Who says this? The Chai Adam says this. Shekos v'chach v'chin kosem shud divrei chayim. Do yoytzei lo b'shuram b'mokum shish gam hashta b'shuram chayiv chatas. If you go out in a place where you can find today your shusram deraisa, one will be chayiv kamen chatas for wearing a pocket watch. That's not called a wearable. That's not an item that you wear. That is something which is considered to be like you're carrying a watch in your pocket. V'yayim b'kit shulchan aruch b'kit shulchan aruch m'aponim shehei v'koyd mikam g'dol m'sh'oshu ayin sham. V'yayim b'shud shalom eshev shekos v'sham l'hatir kishu im Revid Zohov Shutakshad Ayin Shem. Amazing Chiddush. That if it's gold, if the chain is gold, it's not just that the watch is gold, but if the chain is gold, then the entire thing becomes one big Takshad. It's an ornament. It's cool. You ever still go with a cool go with vest and you have a nice chain? Right? It's really cool, right? They still do. You push the button, right? You push that little button, boom, it flips up. And look what I got. Does it tell time? I don't know about that. But who knows? Maybe one day it'll come back in style. Who knows? So the Southern Court, so we have a gold chain. He's mechadish. This is a das yochid. This is not accepted. I'm telling you, this is not accepted to do this, but there's a das yochid that it's not that he ordered his mutter. Shutach ayin sham. The ayin bagos is an ornament. Ayin bagos masham. Shekosav the imah shalshelas dovak mamish. If the chain is permanently attached to your garment, the efshar lehafridoi mehashon, you cannot remove from the watch mutter. To the watch also, but the garment also you have to assume. Okay, I don't know, maybe you're right, okay, you're right. Okay. The Evshala Fridoi Mutter Vimrak Tolly big keres on a hook. It's not permanently attached to the watch as a hook, or it's also Lisa Hashan, it's also Avalosh Shells Piazza Mutter Mutter, but the chain itself is mutter because the chain is an ornament. The chain kosav is shut varsham, the chiluk zed, this difference of if the watch is permanently attached to the chain or not. The ayin mishnabura shakosav le'esar gam im mechubar l'rivit hazof. Mishnabura is machmir. Even if it's permanently attached, you don't have to take out a pack of watch. Oy kosav sham be mishnabura bebe halacha. Te'afilu im toli b'shalshalash al tzavoroi. A necklace watch. They have such things? Yeah, maybe women, maybe the gam hamoyre shows migula lane call, and it's revealed to all gam kein niroloi the awesome neshena sul l'shem tachshit rak leida hasha ayin sham shehevi raya l'zem yushalmi. The Mishnebura says that the ikar, what's the ikar? Is it a tachshit or is it to tell the time? If it's the ikar is to tell the time, then it's a masa. You're carrying it. That can be viewed tuffle to your body. You have an object which you need to for use, and it's a masoi. The ayin b'mincha Shabbos nistapik b'zeh. Hey, can tell you, cufflinks are tachshit.
Even if it has a watch on it, it used to have cufflinks.
If I have a watch on it,
yeah.
Okay, but it's still the ikur thing is a cufflink, so then it'll be good. So ayin b'mincha Shabbos nistapik b'zeh. Hey, can tell you, hakol al tzavor. He has a sadik with a necklace. The imkain lefi zeh gam ashon kishakar chamsav ayat toli gam kain b'zeh. Now he talks about when you wrap it around, you wear it around your wrist. Gam kein bezed v'la mishnah bur yesh la'aser, because according to the mishnah bur, he holds that when you wear a wrist watch, it's also a masoi. It's also for telling time. It's not a tachshit. U'la mincha Shabbos the mitzad gam tzas l'hatir hachinami kan, avla mincha Shabbos bat sim sham b'tzorchin. Rav Moshe Seiris is saying that a yarei shemaim should be machmir. Mishnah bur, Rav Moshe holds the ikar hadin wearing a watch on Shabbos for a man is mutter. It's mutter, it's either called a tachshit, or it's wearable, it's against a tachshit. So it seems, I'm not exactly sure, it's called a wearable, it's called part of your, totally attached to your body, it's tovel to the body. I don't know if there's such thing like that. I think it's a tachshit. Rav Moshe says, mi'ikar hadin, it's mutter. I even saw this say in the article, because he quotes this from Rav Moshe, the Tshuva, but a bal nefesh, or yarishmaim, should be machmir, not to wear a wristwatch in a place where there is no erev. A woman, there is no restriction whatsoever. A woman, a watch, is always called a tachshit, no matter what. Even if it doesn't tell the time.
No matter how cheap it is.
Seemingly not. It's all part... Even if it doesn't tell the time. Right? There's nothing inside. It's a tachshit.
Then it has to be.
Okay, then it must be a tachshit. What else are you wearing it?
Why? Because we're just assuming it's jewelry.
Yes. By a woman, it's always jewelry. By a man, you know, you have a nice watch. It's jewelry. It's nice. It's a nice watch. I got a comment yesterday on my watch. Someone said, such a nice watch. My mother bought this watch for me about 20 years ago. I remember how much she paid. It was about $100 then. Now it must be worth a little bit more. Not that much more. It's a little bit cracked and a little broken. But okay, so it's a tachshit. That's what it says. Bli Einhar. Okay. Bas Einayim. Okay, now we have a halacha, gimel halacha, wearing glasses. So he says the kids says something shocking. It's shocking for us. Gimel, left. Oh, wait, would I jump? Gimel, ois gimel, where is this? Where, yeah, that's next. That's a halacha gimel. Let's go to halacha gimel. Halacha gimel. Okay, it's very late, so let's read the halacha. Mavteach shel ketzef, a key of silver. You want to take a silver key and attach it to your garment as a pin. And you also, you'll have a use, you'll be able to open the door. Are you allowed to do that? Silver. It's beautiful. It's silver, it's a tachshit. So it's mutter. And that's the heter for a woman wear a pin. Women wear pins with a key, and men tie clips, thing like that. He discussed different variations, but basically, if you're going to use this tachshit, even though it's also a key, it's mutter. Aval bate einayim glasses. Afal pi shehein mishubotzes bekesef silver. Who has silver glasses today? You hear such a thing? Ornamental glasses. They have such a thing today? Silver glasses? You can probably go.
Gold,
real gold glasses?
Yeah.
Not anymore, though. Today anymore. You hear such a thing today like this?
Maybe.
They're expensive enough as it is. Right, just to buy a pair of glasses, you need to take a second mortgage just to buy a regular pair of glasses. But afal pi shehein mishubotzes bekesef osu lases b'chem. What? Shocking, right? Shocking. So basically what this means is they didn't wear glasses that had
they just stuck on.
What are these called? Right. What are these called? Stems? They didn't even have temples. They held it. It had a handle.
Yes, it's a monocle.
Monocle.
That's what he's referring to. The glasses, which are not fastened,
monocles, one glass that down,
that are not fastened to your body. Those type of glasses are also to wear on Shabbos, but today, if it's permanently fastened to your body, it's a chelik of your body. It's like a cane. Okay, we're going to have later on. If you cannot exist, if you cannot walk without these glasses, it's part of your body. It's part of me. And there's no concern that you're going to take it off and carry it because it's permanently attached. It's fastened. Glasses are tightly fastened to your eyes. So there's absolutely nothing to talk about. Distance glasses, you're allowed to wear in the shul without any question. The big question is reading glasses. This people play around with. People want to go to shul. They're lucky enough not to wear any distance glasses, and they wear reading glasses. So it's not very comfortable wearing glasses when you're walking in the street. It's no good. But I will live around the corner from the shul, so I can make it from my house to the shul with my reading glasses on. I could cheat a little bit. I can look from the top, but I'll be able to be nena. I'll be able to read daven. I can't daven without my reading glasses. So are you allowed to wear reading glasses from your home to the shul in the place where there's no erev? And the answer is no. That already is usur. That already is a mass. What are you doing? Is it playing a game? That's not called bifocals. That's bifocals. But to wear reading glasses where you don't need the glasses in the street, and the only reason why you're wearing it is in order to be able to come to show them glasses, that is something that you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to wear reading glasses in the street if you don't need them. But regular glasses, of course, you can read because it's tuffle to your goof. And certainly today we combine style with use. Every pair of glasses today is a fashion statement. Right? Even me, I have these nice fancy glasses. See, I have two colors, two tones. The guy convinced me to spend more money. Everything is. Everything, the size, the shape. So today we have a Milo that's not just part of your body. It's not like a crutch. It's not a cane. It's also a fashion statement. So we have the Milo of both worlds. And that's why it's partially coming with glasses today. Okay, we'll have to stop. We'll pick this up tomorrow.